Express Radio.
Your uni, your sound.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Be the Change on Air. My name is Lily Mott, and today we have a little different format for the show. Joining me remotely is Helen Roberts, who is a journalist, presenter, content creator, and public speaker raising awareness about endometriosis and many other issues. I am so excited to have Helen on the show. So, without further ado, let's get started. So, I'm sure that I missed things in that intro. So, do you want to give a little bit of a better intro and then we'll dive in from there?
Yeah, shall I start with giving a bit about my background? Do you
Of
think that
course,
would
I would
help?
love that. Yes.
Can I just say, first of all, thank you for the invitation to be here today, and thank you for accommodating me to be on Zoom. I'm really grateful.
Of course, of course.
So I was raised in South Wales in a place called Llanwrda, which is in Carmarthenshire, and then I went to university in Cardiff, studied acting, so drama and theatre and performing. And then I was so lucky. I basically, as soon as I graduated, I had a job with a theatre in education company where I was going into schools doing shows and workshops based on the Food Standards Agency. Like, it's so random, but to be somebody who just graduated and actually have a job doing something they enjoy doing, that was great. But then 7 months later, I had a message from my old lecturer being like, "Oh, do you want to go for an audition for Rownd a Rownd, which is a Welsh soap opera?" And I was like, duh, yeah. So that's what I did. And yes, I've been acting for the last 6 years. I have been working as well as a researcher with the radio. I absolutely love radio and I love everything about radio. So I loved that part of my life. And I was also on the radio every Thursday for the last 4 years, having my own slot on the weekly or national radio on Radio Cymru, which I adore. And then, yeah, more recently, I've been working with the BBC as a journalist, which I also love that part of my job. And I think what I love the most is speaking to loads of people, and I'm such a people person. And you know, when you just get like a good vibe and good energy and you want to be around those sort of people, like I just enjoy it. And then over the last, I would probably say like year or so, I've taken my like social media a bit more seriously, and I've been like committing to raising as much awareness as possible into endometriosis.
That is amazing. And that's how I found you, was your social media. And I have to say, I was like telling myself, I was like, I'm not gonna do the whole like fangirl thing. I love your Instagram videos. And I say that kind of sparingly. I have like a couple accounts that I'm like, oh my gosh, when they post, I like really follow. And your videos are so happy. And the vibes in so many of your videos, even when you're talking about really serious and horrible things often with endometriosis and your experience with that, the way that you manage to make them very inspiring. And you often put kind of a positive spin and how we can help and how we can raise awareness. And I love it. So I had to tell you, I think that
You
your videos are
so much.
awesome.
Yeah, I'm really grateful because I had therapy today. So I've been having therapy for the last couple of years. And I spoke to my therapist today about my social media. And I felt like the last couple of months, like I was kind of like swooping into quite a negative, like point of view on things. And I was just like, it just wasn't reflecting me. And I'm so glad that you can see past the like the negative ones, because I'm like, no, I want to focus on like being the light. I do think there's a, you know, we can be positive about it. Yes, it's a debilitating disease, but I do believe that we can work with it.
Yeah, and I do think you just raising awareness and sharing your own experience with it is so important with the stigma surrounded around it, which I also want to talk about a little bit. But I want to dive into this a little bit more. And if you're comfortable, I would love to have you share a little bit about your experience with endometriosis, what the
Yeah.
diagnosis process was like. Tell me about that a little bit.
Yeah. Well, you've probably seen it all over my Instagram and a lot. I feel as if everybody's endo journey is quite similar. So I started when I was like 14, all of my friends had started their periods and like except for me. And I was so excited. Like, it's stupid how excited I was to just get my first period. I was like, yes, I'm going to be a woman. Yes, I'm going to be strong. Yes, I'm going to be a powerhouse. So then like the 6 months following up to my like first period, I literally went up to mom, like constantly being like, "Mom, should I be wearing a pad now?" And she'd be like, "But are you bleeding?" And she'd be like, and then I'd be like, "Well, no." And then she'd be like, Well, no, then don't wear a pad. So then, but like every sort of tingle would get me really excited. But I was so wrong, honestly. My periods were just horrific. Like they would leave me broken every time. There's one memory that I have where I was walking the school corridor with one of my friends and I literally had to run into the food tech room to be sick in the sink there. And it was just awful. I was missing a lot of school. I was then like, you know, missing a lot of like my work. And it's school is something that I worked hard for. So obviously taking like, you know, 5 days a month isn't ideal, but it was constantly having that impact on like how I actually felt. And looking around and everybody around me, all of my friends, nobody had the same period as what I did. So I knew there was something wrong and I knew it wasn't right. So I went to the doctor. I think I was like 6 months into like, well, after I started my period. So I went to the doctor and I explained that, you know, my periods make me faint. They make me sick. Like I can't carry on with my like work and my school. And I'm just like, not me. I'm just not well. And then he literally told me, well, you're tiny, you're petite. You're probably just being a little bit of a drama queen. And it's time for you to suck it up now because this is what girls go through. And I was just like, oh my gosh, when you're like 14 and a doctor tells you something, you take that on board. Like they're the medical professionals. Of course, they're telling me the truth. So then he put me on the pill, like so many other girls with endometriosis or people with endo. We've all been diagnosed with the pill, I'm pretty sure. But then it did genuinely help my pain. And, you know, I was in less pain. I was losing a lot less blood. And I wasn't feeling as bad, but then I still also knew that like something wasn't right and it wasn't, you know, fully healed or recovered, or I wasn't cured as well. So I kept going back to the doctor being like, I'm still not right. And then they diagnosed me with IBS, with iron deficiency. I was gluten intolerant at one point. Oh, I was dairy intolerant then. And, you know, all of this was related to the food. And, you know, yes, the food was causing me to like bloat like hell, but then it wasn't like, it wasn't fixing anything. And I still knew that something wasn't right. So after years of going back and forth to the doctor, they eventually referred me to have an ultrasound, which I did. And I had the ultrasound on the NHS and I was probably about 17 at this point. And then they did the ultrasound and they said, well, no, your ovaries look completely fine. Like you look completely normal. And then I was kind of a bit like, maybe I am okay. Like maybe there is nothing wrong with me. Maybe it all is all in my head. Maybe I am being a drama queen. So I kind of like took my 3 years in university as like I kind of went a bit, not crazy, but I did like, I just let loose a little bit. I was drinking a lot. I was eating a lot of rubbish food and I wasn't exercising. Yes, I was working hard in my lectures and with my uni work. But then my periods were still horrific and I was still on the pill at this point. And I remember after graduating uni, just being like, right, this is the time I'm going to come off the pill and I'm just going to start like fresh and go from there. But then as soon as I did, like my life literally just went downhill. So I had this like high in being in uni, just being like very much like a, yeah, let's just do this. Let's do this. Let's not care. Let's not connect to like how we actually feel. We're ignoring everything to being like, oh my gosh, I felt so depressed. I was anxious. I was in so much pain. I was constantly like crying on the floor in agony. And then I went back to the doctor again and I was just constantly dismissed until there was one point when I received a referral to see a gynecology. So obviously after years of trying to fight for that, like you're excited, like you're ready. So I had my notes at the ready and I was like, yes, I'm going to tell him this, 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 and this. But then like literally, he literally treated me like I walked in and he was like, so what are you doing here? And I was like, oh, well, I get really bad period pains. You know, I can't sleep with people because it hurts. And I was telling him and he was like, but you don't need to be here. You need to go and see gastro. And I was like, no, but they've sent me here for a reason. And then he was like, no, you don't need to be here. You can leave now. And I was like, so you're going to let me go with, like, he didn't even feel my abdomen. Like, come on. He didn't even do an assessment after years of waiting for this one appointment. Didn't do anything. But then after that, like, my life just continued to kind of go down this, like, spiral downwards. And it was really difficult to the point where I was missing work and my mental health was on the floor. I was constantly exhausted and I was just struggling. Like, my skin went really bad. My hair was falling out. And then there was one summer, it was like summer 2022, where my mom was literally like, she caught me crying on the floor in our kitchen. And she was like, Helen, you've got to sort this out now. This is not good enough. And you need to get a grip with yourself to push yourself forward. And I was a bit like, this is not what I want to hear right now. Like, mom, I think I'm dying. Like, no. But then it did give me that encouragement. So I literally rang the doctor and I was like, told him that I needed an emergency appointment. The on-call doctor called me back. He was also a man. He said, no, your appointment is not urgent. You'll have to wait the line. And then, so then I called back the receptionist and I said, like, oh, can I make an appointment? And it was a 6-week waiting list to see a doctor. And I was just like, at this point in my life, I could not go 6 weeks without seeing a doctor. Like, I couldn't sleep with my partner at the time. I couldn't go running anymore because it felt like my insides were falling out. I wasn't being paid for work because I did, like, self-employed work. I work as a freelance basis, so I wasn't getting paid. So then I decided to speak to, what I did was I Googled private doctors. So then Nuffield Health came up, didn't think anything of it, paid the £70 to see a doctor. I had an appointment the same day, which was amazing. And I had the Zoom consultation and she was like, yeah, I have no doubt that this is endometriosis. And that was the first ever time that somebody actually, you know, took me seriously and actually listened to how I felt. And that woman has, like, changed my life and I owe, like, so much, like, thanks and gratitude to her. And she told me everything that I needed to do and she advised me with everything. And she literally even said something like, when you go back to the doctor now, they're going to ask you for an STI test. They're going to ask you for a pregnancy test. They're going to then send you for an ultrasound, but just keep going. And then, so that's what I did. Went back to my doctor. I called the doctor and said, no, this is urgent. I've seen Nuffield Health, so a private GP, and I need to be seen now by you. And then they did see me that same day. And then, so they sent me for an ultrasound. She did the STIs, she did the pregnancy test and referred me to an ultrasound and told me, oh, call on Monday to see where you are in the waiting list. So then I called on Monday to the ultrasound department and they were literally like, oh yeah, your doctor has said it's urgent, but we've decided it's not urgent because endo can't be seen on an ultrasound. And I was like, yes, I know this. However, I won't be seen in gynecology until I have the ultrasound. And they were like, well, there's nothing we can do. So then I asked them, like, oh, how long is the waiting list? And they told me a year because I wasn't urgent. And I was just like, oh my gosh, like I can't be doing this. So I asked her for her advice. And her advice was literally like, oh, come and sit in A&E one day. Make sure it's between 9 and 5. Pretend you're in a lot of pain. And then we'll probably give you an ultrasound on the same day. And I was just like, this is such a joke. Like, this is ridiculous. Like, how can you be giving me that sort of advice? Like, how is that okay? So I literally had enough at this point. I was crying so much and I was just done with being fobbed off. I was done with not getting answers and not getting through to people. So I ended up Googling endo specialist near me. The closest place was in Cardiff and I booked an appointment. I was seen like the next day again. And honestly, Mr. Griffiths, he's called Inspire Cardiff. So yes, I had to pay for this this appointment with him, but he was incredible. And he was like, I have no doubt that it's endo. Like, you tick every box. If there was a boxes to tick with endo, like, you've ticked them all. And he sent me for a transvaginal scan the same day. And that transvaginal showed that literally my left ovary was stuck behind my womb. And because of the scan itself was so painful, like that's a clear sign of endometriosis anyway. And, you know, thinking back, I'm kind of like, oh my gosh, when I had my ultrasound, they told me that everything was healthy, that everything was fine. And then clearly, like, you just can't see where the actual ovary is. And so I went for my transvaginal scan. I then had another appointment with Mr. Griffiths to discuss options. And I did have the option then of going back on the NHS waiting list to have a surgery. So I called my NHS doctor then, and I spoke to her and I asked her what the waiting times was for a laparoscopy, and it was 6.5 years. And I was just like, I can't do this. Like, I don't know where my ovary is going to be in 6.5 years. And that was the point that I was just like, right, I've got to do this private. Like, I have no other choice. If, you know, if I want to actually try and have a chance at living my life, I went private and I had my operation. So from the first consultation with Mr. Griffiths, it was 6 weeks to the day of my operation, and I was diagnosed with stage 4 endometriosis. So I'm sorry, that took me a very long time.
No. That is so interesting. Oh. It's so important to hear all of the steps, I think, for people, especially if someone might be listening and they're kind of struggling with that process, to just keep going. And I think that's so, that's 6 years is just, oh my gosh, that's
acceptable.
Yeah. Oh my God. And especially for something. So what are some of the risks associated with, you said, if you wouldn't have had the surgery kind of when you did, what are some of the worries if you don't get it treated?
Yeah. Well, you know, my ovary could have like splattered, or I could have had like, I needed everything removed, or, you know, even my bowel was covered in endometriosis. Like, I have friends who don't have their bowels, and like they have stoma bags and they have a bag instead of their bladder, and people are genuinely losing organs, like, because of the delayed in the diagnosis. And, you know, there's a recent study with Endometriosis UK, and the waiting times now has gone up. Like, in Wales now, the average waiting time is 9 years, 11 months. And I'm just like, this is not okay. Like, girls are genuinely losing organs because of the lack of diagnosis. Like, yeah, it baffles my head.
Yeah. Go.
No. And then I was just going to say, there's like the complications then of, you know, if I would have left it, would I be able to have children? Like, we already know that endometriosis has a significant impact on infertility. Like, where would I be then? Like,
yeah.
It was like, I think the unknown like side of things is just scary.
Yeah. And especially having to deal with the pain and going through that for years longer. That's just, that's horrible. So as far as the work that you're doing to raise awareness, what are some of the changes that you're hoping to see when it comes to women's healthcare in Wales, maybe across the UK, maybe across the world, when it comes to kind of stigma around these issues? What are some of those changes that you're hoping to see, maybe short term, long term, all of them?
I just want girls and people who menstruate and women to just be taken seriously. Like, it's not okay for the doctors to not believe us. Like, it's not okay that we have to go to the doctors 10 times for them to actually believe that we have bad periods. And I feel like doctors sometimes think they're like, oh, they've just had one bad period and they're here now and they're just making a fuss. But that's not true. Like, we've probably had years of bad periods and we've had to psych ourselves up to actually go and speak to the doctor, and then to be fobbed off. Like, that's not okay. Like, education needs to be better. I think endometriosis plays a massive role in education, and we need education around periods in general. Like, period pains are common, but they're not normal. But it's as if we've like normalized this whole like what periods should look like. You should be miserable, you should be moody, you should be wanting to eat loads, and you should be in a lot of pain. But that's not true. Like, that's not what or how our bodies should actually be working. Like, if you're taking 2 paracetamols and it hasn't had a single effect on your period pain, then that's a sign that there's something more and there's something, there's a bigger issue. And I just feel as if, like, instead of being ignored, I would love to just be, yeah, taken seriously and believed from the get-go.
Yeah. I think you're so right with kind of the normalization of periods, because so often it's like, oh, it's that time. Now I just have to be in pain for a week and let it disrupt my life. And there are things that we could be doing. And there are things that if we can kind of overcome some of the stigmas and start to have conversations, I think there's real change that can happen. But I think it's going to take a real social shift as well, which I think the work that you're doing is getting us there. So that's, I'm so grateful for all of the videos, and everyone who's listening needs to go check out your Instagram because it's amazing. So as far as your work in advocacy, in your work as a journalist, what's next for you? What are you looking forward to in the future?
Yeah, so I'm really hoping to start some like events, and I'd love to actually, you know, bring people together, whether they have endometriosis or not. I think it's just that connection and community feeling. I think that's really important. My end goal is definitely presenting. Like, that is definitely like what I want to be doing. And I love it. I love speaking to people. I love finding out stories about people. But also then it's sort of, when it comes to events, it's being able to do retreats and just like raise awareness, but like bring people together, make everybody see the light again. Because I just feel as if life can be really difficult, and life is so challenging that like when we support each other, beautiful things can happen.
I love that. I think it's going to be amazing. And I can definitely see you as a presenter. I think that's definitely clear. And I totally agree. I love talking with people. And when you said a while back, you said the comment about talking to someone and just really enjoying their energy and stuff. And I love that. I totally agree. But before I let you go, I have one more question. Lots of young people want to create change in their communities, in their countries, around the world, but they may not know where to get started with that work. What advice do you have for those people who may be listening?
First of all, I just want to say you've always got to follow your gut. Like, if you feel there is something that's like triggering like a little spark inside of you to like want to create a spark to change, follow it. Like, go with it. There is, your body is telling you something for a reason. And, you know, maybe you will be the first person to do it, but just like keep going. I think that's really important. And I also think it's important to like lean on your network, lean on the people that you know. So, you know, if I decided that I wanted to go and volunteer or make a change with women in Nepal, I would then like, you know, have a look online. What charities are working out there already? Who can I speak to that's already involved in something like that? And it's kind of finding your voice to be able to ask questions, because there's a good chance that somebody will actually be able to help you. And I feel as if that's something that I was always scared of when I was younger. It was something that, oh my God, no, I don't want to ask them a question. Like, oh my gosh, no, don't create a fuss. So, you know, if I ever said something at home and my dad would be like, oh, he goes to choir with me, I'll ask him in choir. I'd be like, oh, no, don't say anything. Like, stay quiet, please. But it's oozing and using advantage and using it to your advantage, definitely, of being able to ask questions. Like, social media is an incredible space to start. Like, you can find literally anybody. Like, you type in, I don't know, charity Nepal, and there would be like information, and just kind of speaking to people and just going for it and just knowing like it's going to be hard and it's going to be a long journey, but it'll be worth it.
I totally agree. And I think social media as a tool is so important because, like you said, you can find anyone. That's how I reached out to you. So we're a testament to it. But what are the best ways for people to follow along with you and all of the work that you're doing?
Yeah. So my Instagram page is called @Helev__. And then my TikTok is @justanothergirlwithendo.
Perfect. All right. And everyone, you have to go check those out because, like I said, they're awesome.
Thank you so much. You're doing amazing things.
Oh, yes. And I think that those videos, like I said, I think that continue the work that you're doing. And I just want everyone, whether you've struggled with endo, whether you know someone that is, just in general, it's so important to be able to just kind of break down the stigma around it. I think that all of these issues, they have the stigma and it's getting better, I think, but there's a lot more work to do. So you're a great person to follow for that.
Thank you so much.
Of course. And thank you so much to everyone for listening. If you want to talk about anything I mentioned, please reach out to me by email at lily@bethechangepodcast.org or on Instagram at Be The Change Media Network. And next week, I'm going to be joined by representatives from Teddy Bear Hospital, which is a student-led society open to all healthcare students. And their aim is to reduce children's fears of hospitals, doctors, and dentists through play. So listen to that interview at 5 p.m. on Wednesday. But until then, be the change you wish to see in the world. Bye, guys. And thank you so much for coming on. This was so fun.
Thank you.